Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm honored to welcome President Vicente Fox to the broadcast. Mr. Fox is the former president of Mexico, a role in which he served from 2000 to 2006. President Fox is considered an innovative force in enhancing the global presence of Mexico and Latin America in business and technology, topics in which we cover in some depth in this interview. Prior to his tenure as president, Mr. Fox served as the president of Coca-Cola Mexico, rising to that role after beginning as delivery route supervisor for the company. Under his leadership, Coca-Cola became the most popular drink in Mexico, increasing sales by almost 50%. As a politician, President Fox was elected as governor of Guanajuato after first serving in the Federal Chamber of Deputies. In 1997, President Fox began his campaign for president of Mexico 3 years before his eventual election. In January of 2007, President Fox announced plans for the construction of Mexico's first presidential library, Centro Fox. As a library, a center of advancement for democracy, and museum, Centro Fox has a stated mission of training and developing Latin American leaders based on social values. To date, the center provides a variety of programming and resources that support this mission through policy, social, cultural, and academic initiatives. President Fox is a graduate of Harvard Business School and received a bachelor's degree in business administration from Universidad Iberoamericana in Mexico City. I recently spoke at President Fox's technology conference, CTEC, and it was during this visit that I interviewed President Fox at Centro Fox in his hometown of San Cristobal, Mexico. And our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 1, people, as he spoke about the various ways in which he is using Centro Fox to establish forums to breed new innovative technology leaders, and Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as we discussed his goal of making Mexico a hub for technological innovation, along with a variety of other topics.
This is Peter High. Please consider reading my new book, Implementing World-Class IT Strategy, How IT Can Drive Organizational Innovation. The book covers topics such as the CIO as strategic facilitator, the development of IT missions, facilitating corporate and divisional strategy, the development of IT's own strategic plans, the development of enterprise architecture, reviewing, refreshing, and communicating strategy, and a variety of other topics. You can find it at Amazon.com, my publisher's website, Wiley.com, and at your better bookstores. Thank you very much. President Fox, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT. It's an honor to have you on our forum.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure, and thank you for coming to our forum. Thank you.
It is my pleasure, I assure you. So as we're sitting here in Centro Fox, the first presidential library in the history of Mexico and a center for education, I thought we would begin with the objectives of the Centro Fox.
Okay. It's very clear. Our vision is that leaders, persons with a name and a face, are who change the world and who build the world where we're living, much more than institutions. So if we believe in leadership and that leadership can change the fate of Latin America, which in the 20th century we did not perform well enough, this can be changed. So we're a Latin American center that gears around ideas, strategies, leadership, and that's our work. Now, we do it through, number one, kids and young. And between them, the poor, the indigenous, and those who have less opportunities. Because the middle, upper class, and the rest, they do have access to the best universities. They come from families that they get education at home. But in our constituency, at home, they don't receive any messages of aspirations, of happiness in life. What they get, and their destiny seems to be poor all of their lives, to be migrants and move to somewhere else, or to work in the very best of the cases as an albañil within the construction industry. So that's the core of what we do, and we do it academically, we do it as a think tank, and we do it as a social institution committed with the poor. So we tackle issues of education, of poverty, of health, and of housing, which are the main four ingredients that people need to have a better life. Doing that, we, for instance, have a program we call President for the Day, that is on leadership, and we bring up to 500 kids a day, 60, 70,000 a year, to give them that message that I just mentioned, and to try to change their minds. And we are impacting on them. We wish we could have a follow-up, that we could have a next experience, but yet we don't have the money, but for the moment it's enough. They go back home to tell their parents. They told me at Centro Fox that I can be president, that I can be a great architect, and that's the goal. We do some think tank in relation to public policies that we take to governments once we develop them. And thirdly, we are concentrated also on gender equity, which in Mexico is still a weakness, same as in Latin America. So gender equity is a passion of Marta that I share. So every single one of our programs has emphasis on women and gender equity. As an example, our board, we invited couples, not individuals. So our board is 50-50. We have 50% women. It's a really enriching board.
That's excellent. I've also, just walking the grounds here and speaking with you, have been impressed with the role that technology plays. And in fact, your big vision to make Mexico a hub for technology. Can you talk a bit about your plans there?
Yes, we ran across a corporation that was in the process of expanding to Latin America and to Europe. And I had the fortune to sit with the CEO and convince him that he should have his second headquarters. One is in India, where they have 14,000 people working for them, IT people, information technologies. All of them are university graduates. And so that is being now replicated here in Mexico and in this place, in San Cristobal, where Central Park's library is. The plan here is 10,000 jobs. There's already 900 that have been contracted in the last 18 months, but it will go up to 10,000. So with this, we got involved much more on technology. And we have a very clear agreement here. We are not partners of the corporation. Central Fox is not. We have an agreement that if I help them, me personally, to get in the market, to contact with the large Mexican corporations and Latin American corporations or the large Spanish corporations, the company will donate a percentage of every dollar income they invoice to Central Fox. So that could be pretty soon our largest source of income to Central Fox. So now that we're involved, we began to spread the message and working with communities around here, ranches and the small farms, with the city of Leon, in trying to develop seminars, diplomats, even a master's program that has relationship to technology. At the very end, we want that this place as the cluster for information technologies for the whole of the continent, including the United States, because these services can be provided at a much lower cost than if you do it in the United States. And number two, Mexico has a very strong competitive advantage with India. And that is the hour zone, which we can be speaking at the same time with the customers in the United States, the Fortune 500 global corporations, when India cannot do that. So I think it has a very bright future, this project.
That's wonderful. It's inspiring to hear you talk about it. I'd be remiss not to mention your time as president. And you won a historically significant election for the first time in 71 years. You defeated the PRI, the Institutional Revolutionary Party, against incredibly long odds. when you started your campaign. And one of the things that I was fascinated by, you as a former Coca-Cola executive, the president of Coca-Cola here in Mexico, a leader in Latin America, used some of what you learned from marketing, your experience as a marketer in your presidential campaigns. I wonder if you could talk a bit about that.
Well, first of all, it was not on my plans, on my radar, to move from private sector to public sector. But I was up to my neck with Mexico's authoritarian government, lack of transparency and accountability, corruption, and government controlling the whole of the economy. And that's the story all throughout Latin America. 20th century was lost for Latin America because we were in the hands of dictators everywhere and all over. So we didn't learn and knew about democracy, freedom. We were always in the hands of these dictators, military dictators. And so we didn't grow as citizens. We stayed childish. We didn't get the culture or absorb the culture that it's on your own, it's on your own initiative that you can build your life and not extending your hand and expecting things from government. So I wish we could spread all throughout Latin America the profound philosophy of the United States. You go as far as you work and you build your own future. You just have to have the opportunity. So that's a key issue when I moved from private sector to public sector in government. And when I came there, being a private sector executive, I was, of course, with a plan to use all those techniques that I used in the private sector that are so wonderful and bring up so great results. For instance, I hired my cabinet through headhunters. That's unique. Ah. That had never happened in the world. So every single guy who joined my cabinet came through a headhunter, two headhunters, Korn Ferry among one of them, and they provided me three names. I asked them, I want the three best people for this job, for Secretary of Education, for Secretary of Finance, and so they gave me three options. And out of those three, I selected one. I was criticized, but I think it was a great idea. It worked quite well. So it was not a partisan government. It was not without the equilibrium of gender equity. I didn't care about religion or gender or whatever. The best men or women for the job. Also, in my campaign, first for state government and then the presidents, I used a lot of marketing. If you're in Coca-Cola 15 years, that's what you learn, marketing. And it worked. It worked. Of course, it was in the surface of each Mexican, the desire for change. So I just had to scratch a little bit, and people would join in and will be glad to contribute to the change. So through marketing, we got there. But then also government plan, government strategies. I think it was very important that we communicated them and shared those decisions with people, with citizens, which never had happened in the past. There were always centralized decisions by the dictator, and he was the only one that could think in the nation. The rest had to be quiet. So I thought that it was very important that everybody knew where we were heading to and what we would be doing every day.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. One of the things that also was striking for me in reading about you, in reading The Revolution of Hope, your very terrific book, was the importance of planning and the importance of setting goals. One might say strategy. To think of the heights that you've reached, I have to only imagine that these were big, big dreams for somebody growing up in a farm in San Cristobal here in Guanajuato. And I wonder, can you talk a bit about the importance of setting big goals and understanding or building that path to reaching those?
Well, two concepts here. One is, yes, the business concept of planning, which is so crucial and important, which can be simplified by saying, this is where I am, that is what I want to go, so I have to build a bridge to get from here to that place. That very basic concept, I brought it into government. So I know all governments are presumptuous that they do have plans, and they present the government plan and the 5-year plan and the 10-year plan, but it's nonsense. It's not true. I did really went to a process of planning. We had 250 indicators to evaluate performance. But this concept is associated maybe in your question to one profound philosophy that I have, and it's a Jesuit philosophy. That is that we're all leaders, but most of the time we don't discover our leadership. We don't know what are our capabilities, our skills, what is our potential. So the best way to solve that is to have heroic aspirations. The higher you can have your objectives, the more you're going to grow. Many people don't believe that, but it's absolutely true. I use the example of this silence exercises of 90 days that Loyola will invite their followers, his followers, to take. So it's 90 days in silence. You're only with yourself. First, you start really solving the question, who am I? What am I in this life for? What is my life plan? What is my purpose? And what I want to do for others? And once you have that, the rest comes easy. When you know where you're going, when you have a purpose, then all your energy, all your talent, all your intelligence, all your physical strength moves in that direction. So when this exercise was finished the first time by San Ignacio de Loyola, the apostles that he had there, once they finished, he told me, you, Javier, you go to India. You, Pedro, you go to China. You, Javier, you go to Latin America. And none of them asked questions. None of them said, where do I get my ticket or how am I going to get there? None of them asked what language they speak. They just obeyed orders, followed their inner power and force, and they just went there. And they conquered not only to get up to the level of emperors and kings, and they became consultants of all of them, very successful. And so that's something I deeply believe in, and that was my case, my personal case. When I joined Coca-Cola, I started as a route supervisor. But I said, this is not my job. My job is president of Coca-Cola. So I started working with that high aspiration, a big objective. When I decided one night that I would move from private sector to public sector, I said, but I'm going to be president of Mexico. And that's what happened. I had to work my way up, but that happened.
That's incredible. It's an inspiring story. And your story in the example you gave of San Ignacio de Loyola yes. And his disciples and the sort of going off into different lands and becoming part of those lands and consulting people who are there and so forth, it calls to mind your own family, which is a family that has come from so many different places. You have the blood of Spain and San Sebastian. You've got you are of German descent. You have family from Strasbourg. You have family from Cincinnati, Ohio. You are, in some ways, sort of a citizen of the world as much as a citizen of Mexico. And I wonder how much you draw upon all that you knew from around the world.
What you describe is a migrant. Migrants are a very special caste. Very special people. Courage they have, the guts they have, the vision they have, the purpose they have, the commitment to be for others and to help their families, making very special people, like it happened with my grandfather. He was the assistant of the butcher in Cincinnati, Ohio. He worked on the backyard, sacrificing the hogs. He didn't like so much blood, and he didn't like the noise of the hog when he was being sacrificed. So he decided to move down south. And with the spirit of the American dream, he came down south to find that dream. So, but all of that is describing what I just mentioned, this very special cast of people, migrants, do have so many abilities and capacities that they really enrich nations like your family has done. But look at the way it happened here. It's Ireland, the origin. When in Ireland became problematic because of pest, because of war, because of unemployment, so they say, let's move out. So they went to Strasbourg. Why Strasbourg? Because the migrant has a very easy way to smell where the action is. So they knew that in Strasbourg was crossroads, a point of intense and dynamic development in Europe. So they went there. They knew they would get a job and future there. But all of a sudden, war came, pest came, conflicts and else, and so they had to move. And then they moved to United States. And United States, they went to Ohio, because that was the crossroad where all things were happening. The Civil War, the Founding Fathers, the development of the nation was in that part of the nation. So they came there and they settled there. And finally, my grandfather came down here. So at the very end, this is my message in United States. That nation has been built all along by migrants. Those who came from Africa, those who came from Europe, those who came from Asia, those who are coming from Latin America. And that's what makes that nation not only diverse, but strong and capable. So I think it's a very short-sighted vision of migration. Warriors building walls and Minutemen in Arizona and closing the border are absolutely wrong. But hopefully Congress will soon enough approve that reform that is sitting there, been sitting there for 10 years now, so that United States can keep being the leader in the world through absorbing, like you said, cultures, knowledge, thinkers, scientific, etc., etc.
This in some ways, I suppose, is one of many, many tragedies of September 11th. Is that I know that you were having conversations with President Bush, as I understand, very meaningful and progressive conversations about these very issues. But our
and
nation.
Not only with him, also with each of the commissions in Congress. Mm. I was there for 4 days, sitting down with each one, negotiating or discussing the reform, which later was presented by Senator Kennedy and Senator McCain. On a bipartisan proposal to Congress, which is the one that is there, but they have not discussed it yet.
Mm-hmm. Bipartisanship, unfortunately, is lacking, to say the least, in my country. Again, returning to your presidency, I wonder if you could reflect just a little bit on your 6 years in office and some of your proudest accomplishments from your time as president.
Yeah, there were clear objectives in my mind, which origin is precisely the reason why I moved to participate there. And one of them was to end up with this mammoth crisis through which we would go every other year in Mexico and Latin America. Mammoth devaluations, huge interest rates, up to 180% a year, inflation rate over 100%. All of that had to be stopped. So that was something that I was after, so I looked for the best finance minister, and he did a great job. He settled down all the disorder. We became a very disciplined economy. The purpose was to reduce deficit from levels of 5% down to zero. We accomplished that. The purpose was to align economic fundamentals between Mexican economy and U.S. economy. So today we have same or about the same interest rate, the same inflation rates, not the same deficit. We have much less deficit in the United States, much less. But anyway, so we converged on fundamentals, which gave a very strong support to Mexican economy. Number two, I wanted to extend the programs on education, health, housing, to be a real opportunity for all Mexicans. And so we grew housing from 250,000 homes built when I came in to 750,000. Stock exchange move 350% up the value of a stock in there, and so on and on. But also we have big problems and a lot of things we couldn't accomplish. What am I proud of is bringing opportunities to the poor. To me, my Jesuit education is shows me that the shortcut to happiness is being for others, is doing things for others. So I know there's a lot of things that we couldn't accomplish. Big problems, the airport. Unfortunately, at that time, we couldn't build that airport. Today, there's no more space, no more flights can come into Mexico's airport. Finally, the big airport is going to be built, but we lost 18 years. If opposition would have not opposed to that airport, we would have had it 10 years ago. Same with the energy reform. The energy reform I proposed, even a more aggressive opening in privatization of the energy sector than what we just got today. But again, we lost 18 years because Congress never approved. And there's a big problem on being minority government. This is pretty difficult, although it's also a secure balance that if you have a wrong executive branch or a president that isn't doing well, Congress can stop them. That's the great advantage. But on the other hand, many times it opposes to good things that should have happened before. But anyway, so we tried hard. I think the future is bright for Mexico today. As you know, I changed my support from my own party to the PRI. And many people tell me today, well, you kicked out PRI out of Los Pinos and you brought it back. So you're not consistent. But I think that ideologies, partisan positions are like little boxes where they box you and you lose your freedom. I learned in Asia and the East that ideologies and political parties are not anymore the controllers and the rulers of political life. Today, a good government in Asia is that one that creates jobs, that makes the economy grow. So very pragmatic governance. And when I see United States with only two political parties and never reaching agreement, one trying to destroy the other, and one trying to disqualify the other, and never coming to joint solutions, except when you go to war. Which I don't know why the United States has to go to war every day and everywhere. But, so, and same thing is in Mexico. I mean, this conflict where democracy is not delivering because of the conflict between political parties delayed strategic decisions for 18 years. So when today people say, President Peña, how good that you got the reforms, I say, yes, President Peña, how good that you get the reform. But PRI, your party, has been responsible for 18 years lost for the nation. But anyway, I'm backing up Peña because my agreement with him was if you commit that you're going to proceed with the reform in energy, the reform in education, the reform on telecom, and the fiscal reform, I'm with you. And I'm going to back you up. And so we, through that agreement, I worked with him, supported him when he was in campaign.
I know that a lot of your work has had as its purview, not just Mexico, but Latin America, the Americas, more generally speaking. And you've spoken eloquently about the need for further reform in South America and the number of economies that are reliant on oil wealth, which props up despots and allows them to thrive, keeps them from diversifying their economies in a way that benefits more people. What's your analysis of where things stand there? Are you optimistic?
No, it's very, very clear. Number one, once we conquered back democracy and freedom, which happened all together in all of Latin America in the last two decades of last century. So it was not only Mexico that threw the PRI and the authoritarian government out, but it was all of Latin America getting rid of dictators. So that brought us into a new era of, with real possibilities of growth and development. And this is so true that in those last 10 years, poverty has been defeated by 18% in a region that has over 500 million inhabitants. So that's a lot. So it's a great accomplishment. And that's a product of democracy and freedom. Now we're on our own. Now we have to do our own effort and build our own future and not expect everything from the powerful and from government. So what happened now is that this this result is not only from conquering democracy and freedom, but it's also China. China's drawing so much food, grain, cattle, minerals, oil from Latin America that really made the Latin American economies to grow. And if you look at that growth, Mexico does not have the same that they did in this 10 years. They did much better than Mexico, because Mexico is much more of a manufacturing economy and so deeply linked with the United States that we did not perform well. But the future is for Mexico, and the problem is for Latin America, because now China is not growing at 12 or 14%, it's 6 to 8%. So Brazil is in big problems. If that bonanza of those years working with China would have been invested in education or invested in infrastructure or invested in manufacturing facilities, then the future would be theirs too, but they didn't do that. So now Brazil's in problems, and that's what has been very fortunate in Mexico, NAFTA, that has given us the possibility to have the strongest by far manufacturing hub in all of Latin America, but also the most competitive worldwide. Today, you manufacture at a much better price in Mexico and much better quality than you can get in China. Many companies that left Mexico to go to China 10, 12 years ago, now they're coming back. Most of them are coming back because you can produce now much better in Mexico than in China.
Especially for the United States at a much closer distance, yeah, right, as you say before. Well, this has been a really wonderful conversation, Mr. President. Thank you so much for taking time here on the Forum on World-Class IT and sharing your perspectives on your time in office, your time as a businessman, and now the wonderful work that you are doing here at Centro Fox. It's been an honor to speak with you.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategies Forum on World-Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World-Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World-Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategies' five principles of world-class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important then that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.